This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and we're going to start today with the latest from Suffolk University and the storm of confusion and criticism surrounding an emerging battle between the Suffolk Board of Trustees and University President Margaret McKenna. Late last week, the board signaled its displeasure with McKenna, and this Friday, it could vote to oust her, which would make McKenna the fifth president to depart Suffolk in the past 5 years. Joining us now to give us more on this story is Mike Bellow, deputy city editor at the Boston Globe. Good to have you back, Mike.
Good to be here, ma'am.
So first of all, just take us back briefly to the beginning. When did all this start between McKenna and the board, and what is the board accusing her of?
Well, I think it really came to a fore last Saturday when a number of Suffolk University trustees openly criticized imperiled President Margaret McKenna. They said she had made unauthorized expenditures and hires, has an abrasive manner. There apparently has been a standoff brewing between McKenna and some of these trustees. Last Thursday, one trustee privately asked her to resign. McKenna has refused to comply and has told the Globe repeatedly she's committed to the school and plans to stay. So Andrew Meyer, the chairman of the Board of Trustees, and at least four other trustees have said they're unhappy with McKenna because her financial decisions have put the school on track to run a deficit this year for the first time in years. So this has been going on, and then today we have a story in the Globe that talks about some other trustees. There are some 27 trustees, I think, on this board. The trustees today were saying, others were saying they're blindsided. They're reading about all this in the paper, and they think it should be discussed behind closed doors. Another trustee tells us that, wait a minute, McKenna's only been running Suffolk for 7 months. Give her a chance.
That's right.
It's a real Donnybrook going on.
Exactly. And she only arrived, as you point out, last summer in July. I mean, you mentioned how it seems like all sides are saying, hey, you're not talking to me because there's a lot of conversation going on in the press, in the pages of the Globe and the Herald even. I mean, Margaret McKenna just on Sunday apparently wrote a letter to the board saying, quote, I will not stand by while this board fabricates reasons to justify my termination with a relentlessly public campaign, no less. Do we have any further sense as to her reaction to all of this?
Well, she's not going anywhere. I mean, she is digging her heels in, apparently. And there was even a student protest today around 1 o'clock where several hundred students showed up and said they're tired of all the fighting. They just want the school to be run the way it should be run. One of the big things that's going on here is, you know, what McKenna has done. According to some of these trustees who warned her out of the leadership post, they say she did a couple of things that were not financially responsible. They say she has overspent when she extended the lease for a college building in Beacon Hill by 6 months, which they said is going to cost $2.3 million. And they also say she negotiated a marketing deal with the Globe without the proper authorization. They claim she's hired 8 employees, including a chief of staff and an assistant chief of staff without their approval. So they say she's done a number of things that have endangered the fiscal health of the school. And they also say that she has not been very cooperative. Now, that's the small group, a certain group of trustees. There are others who say, hey, give her a chance. She needs to do this stuff. So I think it's all going to come to a head on Friday when they meet to figure out what's going to happen.
Right. And in fact, I mean, Margaret McKenna's defenders would say that in the short time she has been as Suffolk's president, she's raised the university's profile. Some of them agree with her decisions to do things like cut ties with the Beacon Hill Institute. I mean, she has a lot of defenders as well. But let's talk for a second about the fact that, you know, as we mentioned a little earlier, McKenna is the fifth president the university had in just the past couple of years. I mean, what's going on there?
Well, it's interesting. They had a longtime leader, David Sargent, who ran the school for years and years and years, and then suddenly in the last 5 years, things have changed. The Board of Trustees has exerted and continues to exert in its capacity control and advisory over what happens at the school. The question is, and there's a basic question of how powerful this Board of Trustees is. You know, McKenna's saying, let me run the school. I should have the power with regard to spending and other things. There's some talk that the board is too powerful. Chairman Andrew Meyer has obviously said, look, we're stepping back. We're just an advisory board. There are all kinds of recommendations for the board to relinquish some of this power and just advise and consent. But apparently there's really a battle for control and power over the school and who really runs it and who can say what happens to the future of the college?
Right. And Mike, as you know, I mean, this is a really important issue because, you know, right now there's a lot of focus going on, you know, on what the board is saying Margaret McKenna has done. But there's also been the spotlight, or the board itself has been under the microscope, because what was it, just in 2014, the New England Association of Colleges and Schools said that they wanted Suffolk to determine what role the board should play, and they wanted the board to actually step back more. Is that right?
Yeah, and in fact, there was all kinds. There's an accreditation letter from this New England Association that notes that the board had become involved in running the school during that period from 2012 to 2014. There were a number of new senior administrators, and accreditors basically told the school they expected to be assured in an interim report by the fall of 2017 that there had to be clear lines of authority, responsibilities, and relationships among the board and the administration, and the faculty has to establish, you know, who's going to govern the trustees and the board and the college? Who has the more appropriate oversight? Now, Andrew Meyer, who's chairman of the trustees, says, hey, the new bylaws have been drafted. They haven't been adopted yet, but the process is underway for the trustees to have successfully stepped back into an advisory role.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, this is coming to a head. You know, what role do they have, and what role does the president have? In fact, McKenna says a lot of these complaints have not been brought directly to her.
That's right.
She says the board is, you know, for all intents and purposes, a person who's close to her has told us at no time had the board raise any of these financial matters as matters of concern to her role as president.
Mm. Well, finally, Mike, before we let you go, as we mentioned, the board is planning to meet on Friday. Any sense of what might happen?
I think it's really up in the air at this point. Certainly, there the sides, the battle lines are being drawn. You know, we have some trustees today saying, look, give her a chance. We want to talk about this. And there's some other folks, Andrew Meyer, some of these other trustees who've come forward who are expressing real reservations about her leadership. So I think it's really up in the air. And for all we know, perhaps they may delay a decision. There's probably a lot of behind-the-scenes things going on here, and I know some of the trustees we talked to today want to talk behind closed door before anything is aired in public.
Mike Bellow is Deputy City Editor for the Boston Globe. Mike, it's a pleasure as always. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
And by the way, we should mention that we did reach out to members of the Suffolk University Board of Trustees and Margaret McKenna as well. They all declined to speak with us. So what does the Suffolk academic community make of all this? Well, John Berg has been on the Suffolk faculty for 42 years, and he's seen the recent and rapid change of university presidents there, beginning in 2010 when then-president David Sargent was forced out over criticisms of his very high salary. Several university presidents later, we have the current controversy with Margaret McKenna. At this hour, Berg is at a Suffolk Town Hall meeting called by the Faculty Senate and Student Government Association to discuss the controversy. So we spoke with him a little earlier and asked him what the faculty makes of Suffolk's current leadership battle.
I think, frankly, the faculty perspective is that the board has gone wild, running amok. All these expressions spring to mind. Initially, there are two interpretations. One interpretation is that Dave Sargent was president for a long time. By the end, got a very high salary, got reported in the press, became controversial. The then chair of the board, Vincent Macaronis, who supported him strongly, made some very intemperate statements and was forced out, and Sargent was forced out. And that's when the musical chairs begin. So one theory is that some board members felt, oh, we haven't lived up to our responsibility. We let Dave Sargent spend too much money. We have to get more involved. And they've really overdone it. I think many of them realize they've really overdone it, but they can't quite help themselves. I mean, when there's an open meeting with the search committee when we're searching for McKenna, what ended up being McKenna, and the chair of the search committee, I think his name's Mark Sullivan, who's now criticizing her, said, you know, we need a strong president who can resist the board. But I notice he's changed. He's now saying she's too strong. It's not working out. So I think that's part of what's going on.
Yeah. Well, Amit, can I just jump in here and ask you,
sure.
What effect do you think this latest round of tumult is having on Suffolk as an institution, on its, you know, its core mission of teaching its students?
It's terrible. It's terrible. Students are in fear, very worried. as I hear people saying, well, what's my degree going to be worth? Why would anyone want to come here? It's partly because, first of all, it's just one more in this sequence, but it's also because Margaret McKenna was the first president in this sequence who looked like she actually wanted to be here or she actually cared about the university. We had two interim presidents who were interim and just spent all their time firing people, exaggerating a little bit. And we had Jim McCarthy, who was better, but was also very clearly building his resume to move on to something better. So, and we really, you know, people liked her by and large. She made some unpopular decisions. She made some popular decisions, but she was open about what she was doing, and she was articulating a vision of what we should be, what we could be, how we could continue to become more attractive to students. And I think most people were really encouraged by that. And then suddenly, you know, to read initially in the Herald that she was in serious trouble for no reason anybody can understand, it was just extremely demoralizing. It was like the rug was yanked out from under us.
Right. Well, I mean, so as you know, as you pointed out, I mean, it's not 100% clear what's motivating the board at the moment. But let me just offer this, because you wrote in your op-ed that was published in Commonwealth Magazine just yesterday that, quote, the Suffolk trustees have a strange fascination with politicians. And I have to say, like, in a way, doesn't that actually make sense? I mean, when we talked to Margaret McKenna last year, I mean, you know, she's the one who piloted that notion that Suffolk is politics, and she reminded us of all the, you know, all the politicians, both locally and statewide, who have come from the ranks of Suffolk students. Why not aim for the president of Suffolk to have those similar deep and lasting political connections?
Well, let me be careful about what I say this carefully. I don't know anything about what Martha Coakley would be like as a president. As I said in that article, mostly when universities want politicians as presidents, it's because they're state-funded and they want somebody who can bring a budget from the state. Sure, politicians are great. We love politicians here. We have them in the, you know, teaching courses. You know, they're across, state house across the street from us. You know, I've placed many interns there. But it doesn't really give one great advantage as a university president, especially now. I mean, the kind of challenges we're facing now are challenges about really need to have a lot of experience of higher education, I think, to cope with them. Stuff like dealing with the accreditors and complying with all kinds of regulations while still maintaining some vision.
Well, let me ask you one last question before we have to let you go here. You've been teaching at Suffolk for 42 years. This is your 42nd year there.
Yes, that's right.
So you've been through a lot with the university. What do you think, more than anything, Suffolk actually needs right now?
I think we need stability. And I think we need stability sort of with an academic vision, educational vision. And we thought that's why this is so upsetting. We thought we had that, and suddenly it's under threat.
Well, John Berg is director of the Environmental Studies Program and professor of government at Suffolk University. You can read his full op-ed published in Commonwealth Magazine. There's a link to it on our website, radioboston.org. Professor Berg, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, you're very welcome, Magna.
By the way, you heard Martha Coakley's name in that conversation. Her name has been floated in the press as the board's preference for president, but Martha Coakley, of course, is not currently commenting. We also reached out to members of the Suffolk Board of Trustees, and many of them didn't respond, and those who did declined our invitation to comment. And by the way, last summer, I did interview President McKenna in her office at the start of her term at Suffolk University. You can go back and listen to that interview and get a sense of the woman, at least at that time. There's a link to it at our website, radioboston.org. Time now for the Remembrance Project, our series from writer Alyssa Eli about ordinary people who lived extraordinary lives. Today, she remembers an artist who abandoned commercial success for a life of solitude.
Dorn Zakai mastered the cartwheel in her late 70s. It was not a surprising accomplishment. After she left her career as a fiber artist in Manhattan, the earth and her body guided her. Painting in the sun, living in unheated barns, harvesting food decades before self-sufficient gardening was in vogue. In life and art, she was deliberately fundamental and physical. Dorn's dear friend Laura first met her in a New Hampshire consciousness-raising group. The other women were chewing over their definitions of freedom.
And at one point, Dorn just was sitting there, We were outside. She ripped off her shirt, and she said, "This is liberation." And she challenged all of us to do the same. And we did. And it was very liberating.
In her Manhattan days, Dorn created textural tapestries 10 to 15 feet across. She wove on an enormous loom with dyed yarns hanging from her studio ceiling like stalactites. Acclaim followed. Museums sought her work. Art schools sought her teaching. But success became too commercial, too compromising, and so she abandoned it. She moved to New England and lived alone, painting landscapes. Dorn had the rare capacity to dwell in true solitude, held by the arms of nature instead of people.
And she did her gardening and her birding and her yoga and her sky gazing. She was very, very much in touch with the sky and the stars and the constellations.
But solitude often vied with loneliness. It was the cost she paid for her uncompromising life.
I just loved her freedom from pleasing people and from feeling she had to fit in. But because of our intimacy, I knew the cost very clearly.
Cartwheeling near the end of her life was a last form of hard-won freedom.
She spent months trying to do it, and she would do it kind of across her studio floor. Isn't that great? Because as much as she was weighted down, she had a capacity for ecstasy.
Some of Dorn's tapestries are still in museums across the country. Others were stored in a basement. Over the years, mice worked on them and nature wore at them, until at last, eaten away, they returned to the earth.
Writer Alyssa Eli remembering Dorn Zakai, who died last January. She was 82 years old. If you'd like to suggest a loved one for the Remembrance Project, email remember@wbur.org. There's more ahead. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.